So this morning I thought to begin talking about the paramis, since I'd like to cover two of them today and two of them tomorrow. How many of you were not at last night's talk on patience? Okay. So I'm going to start it off a little bit repeating what I said last night. And last night I began the talk on patience, one of the paramis. Actually, it's one of the latter ones, but I thought to begin these talks on the paramis with patience because we need it all throughout our practice, through the beginning, from the beginning, through the middle, to the end. And for those of you who weren't there last night, you might want to go online. I don't know when it would be online on Sims, but it will be there at some time, the talk on patience that I gave last night. In choosing the theme for this weekend and last night, I've been reflecting on the inner beauty that we develop as we do our lives, as we go through the 10,000 joys and the 10,000 sorrows of life, and how as people that I know become older, myself included, what I see shining through everything, through all the ups and downs of life, through the aging and the sickness and the going towards death of the body, I see the shining glory of these paramis, these virtuous qualities that begin to take more of a place in one's life when we pay attention and when we have the intention to develop them more. It's really interesting. One of the main reasons I chose this theme of inner beauty is because one of my best friends is a 94-year-old woman. She'll be 95 in about 3 months. And she's gone into Alzheimer's now, but once in a while, you know, something kicks in where she's really, really present and understands that I'm her friend Kamala, who's known her for 35 years, and we've done a lot of traveling together, and she'll actually remember something of the recent past or the far distant past. A lot of times she doesn't remember very much. She just barely knows that it's Kamala in front of her, or that it's time to eat, for example. But what shines through and what was really noticeable to me was the continuation of her deep kindness and her care for me. She cares about things like, are you comfortable? Can I get you a glass of water? Really simple things like that, where her kindness and her compassion just shine forth. And it gave me a lot of hope, really, for my own mind and body. And it made me more to pay more attention to developing the beautiful qualities that continue to shine forth in our lives as we lose faculties, we lose the ability to remember, to say things in a kind of a coherent way, to walk, etc. But these beautiful qualities continue to shine forth. Her patience with what's going on in her body is amazing. Just her ability to be resolute in getting through what she's going through right now. She broke her hip and can't walk anymore. So inner beauty has become a lot more important to me and many people that I'm close to than anything else. And so speaking about those qualities is what's become important to me and really paying attention to them. So even as we age and the outer condition and the so-called beauty of our bodies defined in different ways by different people depending on how old you are, that changes. We're not as youthful and vibrant outwardly in our bodies, but inwardly we can become more so. it's possible to develop that vibrancy and strength of inner beauty. So by inner beauty, what do I mean? It means those qualities that come from really discerning what's important in life, really valuing what's important in life, relinquishing what isn't of value, and nourishing what is of value. It comes from being compassionate to ourselves and for others, because we know change happens in the body, in the mind, in the world. And what's important? What can we put as the most important thing to do in our lives now? So these virtuous qualities are these 10 paramis that I'm going to cover five. We'll have covered five when the weekend is done. And Steve will cover the other five when he comes in March, my husband Steve Armstrong. These 10 qualities are generosity and morality. Harmonious living is another way of saying morality, keeping with the five precepts. I'll cover those today. Renunciation, balanced effort or energy, wisdom, and truthfulness. Mm-hmm. Truthfulness is part of the five precepts, and so I'll cover that, of course, today also. Resolution. Resolution is a lot of what we do at the beginning of a new year like this. We make resolve, for most of us do, for what we want to pay attention to in this coming year, so that we can use that as a basis of support for the ongoing years. And so I imagine that a lot of you are bringing that up in your minds now. These resolves are New Year's resolutions that you are wanting to pay attention to. Goodwill. This goodwill means loving kindness or metta, very basis of our being human. And then the last two are equanimity and patience. I spoke about patience last night, and I'll speak about equanimity tomorrow in relationship to metta especially. So this inner beauty is really the shining grace of our lives. And no matter how young or middle-aged or in our elder years we are, it's something that is really important to bring our mindful attention to. No matter what condition the world is in, the world immediately around us, the political and social world, the greater world, what's happening in among different countries and among different peoples, no matter what's happening in all of those domains, if we could come back to the strength that we have in our hearts of this inner beauty, we feel safe, we feel strong, we feel stable, no matter what's happening out there, or whether the body or mind is crumbling, we still have a really good chance of feeling stable. As I mentioned at the beginning, when I see my friend Alexandra, who is almost 95, she feels really, really stable to me. She has a feeling of a great deal of inner safety to me. She's not a Buddhist. She's a Christian, a mystical Christian, who's just naturally kept these precepts and naturally developed her heart and her mind. And she's been a mentor to me most of my spiritual life, my life of really being consciously awakening to the truth. So I see that is true. It's the truth. It's real. It's not something that I'm making up. It's not theoretical to me. And if you look around you, you'll find people of that nature around you. It might even be your very own self or not self, you know, that you notice that in, the stability you feel even when things are breaking down around you. Usually, we place our happiness in things out of our control. We do have to have concern and put attention to the financial world and the world of feeling safe and secure and having a home and our relationships being okay and to the best of our ability. But all of that changes. People very close to us who have been very good to us, they die. They are no longer in our lives at times, or they go away, or the relationship changes. And it's not very stable to put our happiness in something that we can't control. Of course, if we understand that it's uncontrollable, we have a lot more stability. But to place our happiness in our own inner beauty, in our ability to nourish and to strengthen those qualities within us, this is something that can be much more stable to us. So just presenting that as a possibility for you all to take a look at in as you make your resolutions or resolves in any way that you do that at the beginning of the year. All of these beautiful qualities, these paramis, they're universal. They don't really belong to any one particular religion. Nobody owns them as a group or as a religion or as a philosophy. They're universal. They're generic to all cultures and all religions. They have one or more, all of them. It's common sense. It just breaks down, comes down to common sense. It makes sense to develop them, to have them, to take note of them in our lives, to increase them. One of my students, said that this is not just common sense, it's advanced common sense. It's a common sense that we bring conscious attention and intention to. So parami, most of you are familiar with that word. And there's more to it than just the meaning of perfection. Of course, before our present Buddha of this time was the Buddha, he was what we call a bodhisattva, on his way to being a Buddha. And bodhisattvas of all times perfect all of these virtuous qualities. They delay their complete enlightenment so that all of these qualities can be totally perfected. In the Theravada tradition, there's 10 of them, which I've just mentioned. And in the Mahayana, Vajrayana, Tibetan traditions, and Zen tradition, Chan tradition, there's 6 of them. But they overlap, they come together, they're all connected, and they have great meaning for people in the Buddhist tradition, because it is known that the bodhisattva, before becoming a Buddha, had to bring all of these to great perfection in order to carry out and share the Dharma when that being became a Buddha, to be able to share the Dharma in the most perfect way possible to all beings. So parami means perfection, but there's a part of that word that can mean more than perfection, and actually perfection is kind of very a high bar definition, and sometimes it can be a little scary to look at these paramis as perfections, because we don't always feel that we can be perfect. We do the best we can, and that sometimes is the most realistic that we can be with our practices of these. But one of the meanings of parami is to carry one across to the further shore. Param means that, to carry one across to the further shore. It means that through all of the ups and downs of life, one of these paramis or a combination of them is going to help us to get through the and to navigate our lives, to be able to use that as the rudder or the sail or the boat of our life. And indeed, sometimes and we need all of them to get us through. One is more important than another at times. Another of the definitions, deep definitions of the word parami, comes from the word parama. It means of foremost importance, of foremost importance. And a lot of times we may think that, oh, it's what's important is coming and closing our eyes and being in a certain position on our cushion or on the chair and meditating. But the Buddha, when he gave the teachings, he always really started out with the teaching I'm going to give, which is about sila, or harmonious living. And sila requires a lot of the integration and the strengths of the paramis, these 10 paramis that I talked about, generosity and patience and resolve and being able to stay with it, perseverance, etc. That's what can be of foremost, of first importance in our life. And indeed, it's what carries us through the nitty-gritty of life and to the very end, to what gets us beyond to the further shore, something we may not be able to see right now. But if we have that momentum will carry us beyond what we're going through the nitty-gritty of life now with. So, morality, or another way of saying that is harmonizing with life, living in harmony with those around us and feeling that inner harmony within us. So important. And within that, truthfulness. So I'll weave my way through these two today. So first to start, this morning, to start with sila. That is the Pali word for morality, which is kind of it's a bit of a harsh word in our culture. So I like to use the word harmonious, the words harmonious living. In the Pali, when you go back to the etymology of the word sila, it can mean coordinating. It's like connecting our lives, coordinating our lives with others. Harmonizing is a word I haven't seen used, but that's like coordinating, connecting in a harmonious way with others and with the depth of ourselves. It's cultivated by letting go of our tendency to harm by our speech and our behavior. So this is what the five precepts, which I'll talk about later, not in this sitting, but I'll talk about later, this is what the five precepts are all about. The five precepts are not about what's going on in the mind and looking at that deeply, but the five precepts are about speech and behavior in particular. So it's letting go of our tendency to harm by our speech, by our behavior. Letting go of ill will comes naturally when we let go of the tendency to harm. And a byproduct of that is the cultivation of goodwill. Because when we let go of ill will, then it's natural for goodwill to come to our hearts. It's kind of a natural development of that. So naturally, too, as human beings, we generally aspire to elevate ourselves in life. We're here together on the spiritual path because we want to understand more deeply about ourselves. That's what brings us together, puts us all in the same room. We do that in different ways. We want to understand more deeply about ourselves so we can understand more deeply about others and about the world. And we can nurture in ourselves those qualities that help us gain greater understanding, greater compassion, elevating ourselves as human beings, not just, you know, being in kind of status quo of what everybody else is, but seeing if we can do better in order to help, in order to serve also. So the Buddha called such a person as we are, really when we're honest with ourselves, Saparisa. That means a beautiful person, a person with a beautiful heart, a beautiful mind. And even though a lot of us have the habit of negating that in ourselves, it is really so that we have beautiful hearts, that we have beautiful minds. And we're here because that is so. And we're wanting to develop that even more. It's a beauty that doesn't depend on outer conditions. This cultivation of inner beauty doesn't depend on our physical appearance. It doesn't depend on whether we're physically well, even. It doesn't depend on our social status or what color our skin is or our wealth or our education or our social or career status. It doesn't depend on any of that. Inner beauty depends on something that we can develop and rely on and that can become really stable, more stable than the changing world or our changing bodies around us. It doesn't depend on how many books we've read or our worldly accomplishments. It really just depends on what we choose to develop in ourselves. And then after we make the choice to do that, to pay attention to that. It depends on the trueness and strength of these qualities in our own hearts. So this is really important. All the talk about the empty nature of phenomena and all of that will mean nothing to others or ourselves. It doesn't come from a really, if it doesn't come from a really strong and quiet heart imbued with all of these qualities. So virtuous conduct or harmonizing. Most of you know that the Buddha's teachings are, in particular the Eightfold Noble Path, are broken down into three major categories. The first one is and does have to do with virtuous conduct or sila. And the second place where we develop or we practice is in the area of concentration, samadhi, and the third development is in the area of wisdom or panya. So sila, samadhi, and panya are the three basic practices that we do in this training of the Dharma, the teachings of the Buddha. And usually when our teachers and going back to the time of the Buddha, when they offered the teaching, it started out with this teaching of sila, not with concentration or not with the teaching of wisdom, but with the teaching of sila or harmonious living. When the teachings came to the West, because it came into a culture of trying to understand one's mind, it came into a culture of psychology, really, when the Dharma came to the West. People were very, very interested in the wisdom part of it and the concentration part of it. And so we started out here in the West with learning all about how to concentrate the mind, how to develop insight through the practice of Vipassana. And a lot of the sila part was kind of skipped over, not given a lot of attention. And so now we're, as teachers of this day and age, we're coming to give more teachings around sila, around harmonious living. This is the basis, the foundation, the platform of the Dharma. And so it really is important to come back to this over and over again and really live our lives from this platform, to give careful consideration to our speech and our behavior in our daily lives, because this helps us when we sit. We're able to calm the mind more. We're able to see more deeply into the deep wells, deep ponds, deep oceans of the mind. We're able to see how it affects others and how it affects our own hearts as well when we practice harmonious living. We're able to see what happens when we don't practice it or when we forget. So there are times for all of us, it doesn't have to be at the beginning of the year, but there have been times for myself, different junctures of the year, especially when I've kind of gotten off track, when I, in sila, when I realize, boy, I've got to clean up my act. There's a way that I just speak without thinking sometimes to certain people or on certain subjects, or there's a time when I just, certain behaviors of that just naturally come out when certain conditions arise. And I really want to pay attention sometimes to those areas, want to clean up my act. So this area is where we could maybe look at more as we go through our life day to day. And maybe in these next weeks or days of January, when we're looking at those intentions for the year. This morning, I'm not going to talk about the five precepts per se. I'll talk about that later. But I want to talk about the underpinnings of these five precepts that we don't hear about very much. And the underpinnings of these five precepts are called the two guardians of the world. I loved it when I heard that, and I wanted to learn more about that. What are the two guardians of the world? I come from a Catholic tradition where there's, you know, lots of saints and angels. And when I came to the Buddhist tradition, when I came to the Dharma, and there were celestial beings and devas, it just kind of resonated with me a lot. So what are these guardians of the world? They're not devas or celestial beings or saints or like that. These two guardians of the world are actually qualities of our own minds and hearts, qualities that are underpinnings also of the ten paramis. And these underpinnings are called hiri and otapa. There's two words which I'll describe and define. They are the proximate causes for careful attention to arise. Hiri and otapa, the proximate causes for careful attention to arise. In Pali, which is the ancient language that the teachings of the Buddha were recorded in, some of the most ancient teachings, hiri and otapa are translated into English words that aren't very good translations, I would say. And so it's good to expand on that. And that's what I want to do this morning, is to expand on that. Hiri, and you'll see why, because hiri is translated as moral shame. So not very nice words in our psychological culture. So moral shame, it's not associated with aversion towards oneself or aversion, and any kind of aversion, even aversion towards others. But this hiri is an inner sense. And check this out as I say this. Check this out with your own experience. It's an inner sense that our words or behavior aren't harmonizing aren't right. It's kind of, I call it the cringing moment. You know, it's when I may not, you may not see it in my face or in my shoulders, but it's like I'm going, ooh, I shouldn't have said that. I shouldn't have done that. And it's like a, it's almost like I feel my heart closing down a little bit and then opening to, can I review that? Or maybe not right now because I'm cringing too much, but can I review that at some point and really take an honest look at that moment or those moments when that happened? It's an intuitive sense that this is hurtful to myself. That's what I first feel. Because when you cringe, it's like, ooh, this hurts. It's, of course, it's, you know that it's hurtful to others too. But mostly we see that this is hurtful for ourselves. And I boil this all down to hiri is respect for oneself. When all is said and done, you know, when we've gotten over the cringe and we've been able to look at what happened in our behavior or our speech, we start seeing how much we respect ourselves because we've been able to do this. We've been able to really be honest with ourselves and really see how we can do better because it comes from that deep respect that we have for our own hearts. We see the danger in it to ourselves. Because now this goes into karma. Because we see when we act out or we say things that are harmful, that it's done, our actions or our speech are accompanied by aversion or attachment or even delusion. Aversion and attachment are always accompanied by delusion, but sometimes we see mostly that it's through habit patterns, through heavy delusion, just the habit patterns of saying and doing without thinking. That's heavy delusion. So when our speech or behavior is accompanied by these unwholesome qualities of mind, that puts karmic seeds into the mind stream to bear fruit at a future time of unpleasant feelings in the mind. And more and continuous habit patterns if we're not paying more attention. So by really taking notice of this, we're respecting ourselves. We're respecting the cleanness that we want of our karmic mind stream, that we want it to be as free as possible from unwholesome patterns in the mind. So it's a deep respect for one's own integrity, for one's own dignity. So can you see how hiri is so important? That deep respect for oneself, that is the underpinning of these careful attention to the five precepts. The five precepts, by the way, are refraining from killing, from harming in any way beings, from stealing, refraining from lying, refraining from sexual misconduct, and refraining from taking any kinds of intoxicants that will cloud the mind. Those are basically the five precepts for lay people. So hiri is that inner sense that our words and behavior don't feel right. It's a form of respecting our integrity, our dignity as human beings. Maybe it's not what we are exemplifying right now, but at least it's something that we're aspiring towards more. And the other guardian of the world, which is within every being, the possibility of being within every human, is otapa. You don't need to know those Pali words, but they're the only words I have right now to start out with. The translation in English of otapa is moral dread or moral fear, another not very good definition in English. But when we think of it as a healthy form of fear, that fear of the consequences of our actions, the fear of the consequences of our words. And just as a simple example, last night I gave the example of I have four grown children, and sometimes I've seen the consequences of blowing my top, losing my cool, and saying, "Why didn't you clean your room?" You know, or, "Are you ever going to finish those dishes in the sink?" You know, which have only been there for an hour. I mean, to a teenager, an hour isn't a long time. So being there an hour is fine for them, but being there 10 minutes was not fine for me. So, you know, blowing my top and seeing the consequences of that. But it took me years to really understand the consequences of blowing my top or getting it back from them, you know, because they were fairly respectful children, but sometimes they react in their own way of, you know, hustling and bustling around and slamming doors and talking back and all of those things that normal kids do. And then we see, you know, later that now I know with my grandchildren and also with my grown children, because they're adults, and of course I respect them as adults, that I don't speak that way anymore, because when I do, oh, I really get it, you know, they're... "Mom, I'm grown up now. You know, you don't have to talk to me that way." Okay. So the fear of consequences, just on that very simple level. Or, you know, most of us know about that in terms of talking to our partners and spouses and how it is when we're not completely truthful or kind in our speech or our behavior. So that can be on, you know, very everyday level. It can be on a more serious level. When we steal, what are the consequences of that? Most of us aren't in that world, or all of us aren't in that world of even contemplating that. But we see that what the consequences of stealing or of killing are in our society. This is a very healthy form of fear, otapa, where we have a sense of knowing the communal standards that make up a sense of harmonious living. And when we know that, to really keeping to those standards in different communities, it's different. It's very unique how those standards might play out. In Burma, it's different than it is in America, as far as how we relate to elders or the monks and the nuns, for example, of how we show our respects for them, or how we are even more refined in our ways of being with the precepts in kind of like the community of monastics than we are in our daily life. How we're much more refined. I notice how I'm much more refined in saying just what is needed among my monastic teachers and friends. Not saying just the truth, but being very precise in saying exactly what needs to be said. For example, I would say there were a lot of people there. And then when I would think about it a little more, I would say, there weren't a lot, there were just some. Then I would refine that and say, oh, there were some people there, like that. So when our speech and behavior is really paid attention to in a community, we're really respecting others. We're really respecting the integrity of the community, because the integrity of the community really we see how fragile it can be. Just by breaking any thread in the community is a big deal. It can break the trust of a lot of people. It can break the feeling of safety among a lot of people. So when we have otapa, we're very conscious of our respect for others. We see the danger that it can cause others. With hiri, we see the danger a lot of how it causes our own hearts to break, to fracture, to not feel safe because of the karmic seeds that we're putting in our own hearts. But in otapa, we're really seeing the danger it is to the community, to the integrity of the community, the connectedness of a community. So otapa is respect for others. So it isn't surprising that the Buddha's teachings encourage this kind of moral shame, this kind of moral dread, not being respected. We want to be. By respecting ourselves, we see that others respect us. By respecting others, we see that also others respect us. We pay attention a lot with this hiri and otapa to people that we love, that people that are part of our community, that people we wouldn't want to break a tie with. A lot of times when I look at these qualities in myself or when I feel them arising, this kind of signal about hiri and otapa being there, I feel that, oh, how would my teachers feel if they knew that I wasn't saying the complete truth? How would they feel? Or if they saw that if they saw me exaggerating something, or they saw my behavior of when I was impatient with something, I would, you know, turn around and walk off briskly. Even that little kind of behavior, it comes to my mind. What would my teachers feel about that? You know, then I feel that kind of a little bit of that good kind of shame, that good kind of looking inward and seeing, how could I do this better? So it's not to wallow in guilt or self-recrimination, but to have some self-reflection during that time. I would see Manindra doing this, one of my teachers. So, you know, I would feel like, oh, he's got hiri and otapa guarding him too. Just remembering times when he would be at our house and I wouldn't be doing things that would be exactly to his liking. For example, he liked it when I would cook Indian foods. Of course, I have no idea how to make Indian food. I just, you know, take the recipe out and I do what I can. And he's pretty good at cooking and he likes spices and all that. So he would stand beside me and he'd say, now you put a little of this in, now you do that. And I would like that, I would enjoy that. But then when, you know, I'd put too much of some spice in or I'd be having it on the frying, the herbs on the stove too long, I would see this look come across his face, you know, a little bit of like, his lips go a certain way. Those of us who know him recognize it. They kind of go together like that a little bit. And his eyes, you could see those little wrinkles come over his nose and between his eyebrows. And one time, during the time when we were cooking together, I actually asked him about it. And I said, Manindraji, is something going on? Are you frustrated or upset or something going on with me? And he said, oh, he said, yes, he said, but there's a signal. There's a signal. It's inside. And I said, but I see it on your face. And he said, oh, yes, yeah, sometimes you can see it on my face. And he says, but I won't say it in words or it doesn't come out in my behavior. But you can see things go across people's face when we really get sensitive to life and to our own feelings. You can see that happen. And he would say, there's a signal, there's a signal. And I always wondered in the beginning, what does he mean by that, there's a signal? And that signal, I learned later by feeling it, is Hiriyotapa. It's that inner guardian that says, danger, danger, you know. You better watch your speech or behavior right now, because something hurtful to yourself or to others could come out. So it's being careful. It's just that. It's being careful. Having that careful attention. When we're careful, it's a gift of fearlessness that we give to others around us. When others around us know that that's a sensitive person, they're pretty careful about their speech and their behavior. We feel relaxed around those people. We feel safe around those people. We feel like a stability in our minds and our hearts that we don't feel when we're on guard or when we're afraid to say something because we might be put down or censored or we might be thought of as stupid. But when we feel safe among people who are sensitive, people who are following the five precepts or who have the sensitivity of this Hiri and Otapa, it's something good to be around. So it's something good that we can develop in ourselves. I love this saying by Goethe. He says, I have come to the frightening conclusion that I am the decisive element. It is my personal approach that creates the climate. It is my daily mood that makes the weather. I possess tremendous power to make a life miserable or joyous. I can be a tool of torture or an instrument of inspiration. I can humiliate or humor, hurt or heal. In all situations, it is my response that decides whether a crisis will be escalated or de-escalated and a person humanized or dehumanized. So, in our world of social and cultural conflict, in our world of just a lot of ups and downs, and the climate's changing, the political climate, the environmental, the political, the cultural climate is changing, and hopefully we're more harmonizing with each other. It's really important to pay attention to these inner guardians within. Pay attention to these places that can say, be careful, and to help us to have that pause, that power of pausing that I talked about last night in patience. The practice, the power of pausing that says, pay attention to what I'm going to say right now, what we're going to say right now, to what we might do, and then to think carefully, to reflect. It might be a few moments before we can take the next step, say the next word. So this is all about Hiri and Otapa, the underpinnings of the practice, the underpinnings of the paramis and of the precepts and of the Eightfold Noble Path. So before I give it to all of you for questions, a few questions, I'd like to end with this by the Buddha. This magnificent chariot of the Noble Eightfold Path has Hiri and Otapa as its backrest. If you have this backrest, you will have something to rely on, something to depend on, something on which you can sit comfortably as you travel toward your aspiration. If these qualities are weak, one will risk losing mindfulness and all the dangers that ensue when you lose mindfulness. So important qualities, Hiri and Otapa. So how about now just taking a few minutes, maybe 15 or 20 minutes. Be comfortable in stretching, getting up, and going to the bathroom if you need to, and coming back and partaking in any of the discussion that we have right now about this, these things. Yes. Goethe, G-O-E-T-H-E. Uh-huh. I could post that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But save it. Bring it back to me. Would you? When I post it? Okay. Any reflections or questions about that? Any experiences that you have had? That's important, you know, any experiences that you have had that can be an example of Hiriyotapa. Not places, also places where you find difficulty. But you know what's really important in groups like this is when you talk about your strengths and how it is for you. Yeah.
Well, sometimes I feel really bad because I have a thought,
uh-huh,
but I don't act on it. So it made me feel better to hear that Namita had a thought too, but he was not acting on it. But he was,
yes. It was, sometimes I'll repeat, sometimes you feel bad because you've had a thought, an unwholesome thought, and not acting on it, but made you feel good that you knew Manindra also would have these thoughts. You could, you know, when you get sensitive, you can see it go across the face and wouldn't act on it. And that's the really important thing in the precepts, is not to act upon all these, the unwholesome thoughts that go through the mind, because until, it's said that until we reach, you know, at least the third stage of enlightenment, which is, you know, it could be really close, but it also could be lifetimes away, we're going to have these thoughts. And when we don't act on them, the thoughts weaken. But when we act on those thoughts, it strengthens the habituation of those thoughts. Yeah. So this is good. Before I forget, I want to point out that there's this book about Manindra and his stories of his life called Living Life Fully by my good friend Mirka Nastor, who's attended retreats with many of you at Cloud Mountain. And she's written all these stories about Manindra that exemplify all these kind of common, even minor things in life that all of us may think are not so important, but they're really important. Any other experiences or questions? Yeah.
So you said when you act on these thoughts, you strengthen your mind. Does that mean that you weaken them?
Yes, that means we weaken them. When we don't act on unwholesome thoughts, we weaken their presence in the mind. Because by acting on them, it's just more karmic intention that we put there, and that gets planted in the mind stream. But when we don't act on them, the mind is saying, let it go. I mean, it's not saying that in words, but it's just letting it go, letting it pass by. And sometimes there's a lot of these empty echoes of the mind, that it doesn't mean you're a bad person because those thoughts are there. It's just residual old thinking patterns, and it's really helpful just to see them as such. Okay, this is just an empty echo of the mind, just bouncing against the walls of the mind. Let it fade.